Well, I'm not hooked up this morning, so whoever's recording back there is going to... We'll have to pick up some other way, but I don't think you'll miss anything by not recording what I have to say this morning. But at any rate, we're glad you're here, and thank you for being here. And those that are visiting, we certainly appreciate your presence. We are certainly always appreciative of anyone that comes our way to be in our services here, and we trust that what we have to say will be beneficial today. And we trust also that you'll find the people in this place to be warm and cordial, and sharing about your edit, about how you feel, and your worship to the Lord will be such today that will be good for us to have been here. I guess that there's much being written and said today about a way of life that many of us in this church right here in this place are living. How many of you have you heard it said, we're living in the fast lane? That is a terminology used today, especially among people that are in the category called the yuppie group. I read recently that in this country alone, the upper class of this country will increase by some 30% to 40% in the next decade. That means that this country in which we live, which is so affluent now, will increase even more in its affluency. That the pressure moving every one of us toward a higher income level, a higher net income, a higher net worth, more money in our pocket, more money to do with, more free time will increase. Now, you say, how can that be? I can only tell you that that is what scholars are saying about this country in which you live. Someone says that, you know, living in the fast lane is the only way to go, but you know, there's an alternative to that. There is a passing lane. And some of us need to get in that lane that allows those to pass us by and go right on in the fast lane. We need to get in the lane wherein that you've been on the road, I know, and seen the lane that the big trucks get in, and you can go right on by them. Well, we need to get in that lane where the 18-wheelers are, folks, and slow down a little bit. Because what I'm observing is that many of us, and I'm really pointing this at me, too, because this lesson comes home to me. I'm in this group of people. It concerns me that we're living in the fast lane. So caught up in the consumption of this world that we neglect our responsibilities and duties of being a Christian, of being a teenager, of being a young adult, of being a mature, retired Christian. We're all caught up in it, whatever stage in life we're in. You know, that living in the fast lane doesn't mean that you're up and coming, particularly in the fact that you're in the age that, in income level. But you may be caught up in the fast lane, so to speak, that at school, I just don't have time to talk to anybody about being good, being honest, showing integrity in my life. I'm concerned about being successful, making sure that I meet all the standards of the grades that my instructor gives me, and not concerned too much about my spiritual growth. And we as parents are neglecting the very same thing in our students, in our own home, our children. But we certainly don't want to miss having them not meet the standards of the SAT and the so on and so forth. Because if they don't make that, they may not get in school. And that would be just terrible because they wouldn't be successful. The relationship in this earthly life is so integral to our lives that it has become the focus of our life. This relationship to this life is weakening the church. It's weakening me. It's weakening you, every one of us, and the growth and development of this place, this church, and this place right here. Our relationship to this life has taken control of many of us. It has its grip on us. It's taken control of our young people. many of whom don't even desire to become members of the church anymore, and would wantonly tell you and stand in front of you and say, I don't care to go to church anymore, and I'm not going. And the relationship that we allow to develop in our own home has created that. It has created the relationship among mature, retired people within the church, not here, but all over the country, that I've retired from General Motors and from the government, now I can retire from the Lord too. Instead of devoting more time that you have on your hands to the Lord, we're devoting more time to those retirement things of this life. And those of us that are striving to get to retirement are so caught up in this vicious circle that we don't know how to get off the treadmill. On the board, I've got vanity spelled out. And the V stands for the vicious circle that vanity creates in our life. Because vanity is one of the roots of this relationship to this world that is eating away at the strength and the fiber of the church and of individual Christians. The vicious circle to be successful, to be the ultimate achiever, to be number one, to make sure that I meet that promotion list, to make sure that I have everything in place when it comes time for me to be rated as to my performance in this life. It's a vicious circle. Did you ever think about it? It never ends throughout life. The A is for the allegiance that we once had to the Lord, but that allegiance now is the vanity of this life has got us by its control. The allegiance to how vain we can become about our material possessions and not only our good looks and how we take care of ourselves. But it becomes the wrong master for many of us. And we align ourselves with those that are living in the fast lane. And vanity becomes a nuisance to us too. We as people of God can become so caught up in vain materialistic living that we become a nuisance, obnoxious, unpleasant individuals to live with and to care for one another. In our lesson this morning in class, we talked about the marriage relationship and families and the relationship that is involved there. And sometimes we can become nuisances to one another in our own family because we get caught up in traveling, we get caught up in moving here and yon, staying in the fast lane to be successful. We become ingratitude in our attitude. We never give thanks for anything. We can't even get our children to say thank you for the piece of candy or gum that they get. And if you do give presents, they don't even think to say thank you at Christmas time if you so conduct yourself. Until you go and say, well, don't you say thank you for what you got. Ingratitude in the sense that not only in our children, but in ourselves as adults. We don't even say thank you to our mate for the little kindnesses that come our way. We don't say thank you to our parents, whatever age we might be. We don't say thank you to even the people we love. The closest people we love. And we become people of ingratitude. Vanity leads us in that direction. It turns us away from things that God wants us to be thinking about and working for. It turns our minds, our hearts, our direction just in the opposite direction of where God is wanting us to go. Vanity turns our head at every moment to look at the good life, the things that are in the fast lane, the material attitudes that prevail, the buying the bigger, the better home, having the nicer, the bigger, the better car, having, instead of two or three suits, having four or five or a dozen pairs of shoes in our wardrobe. The Y stands for where we're yoked. We're yoked to this whole attitude of vanity. We get yoked to it because the world has got us wrapped around its finger. The materialistic attitude, vanity of life becomes bondage for us. We become servants to this attitude of living a vain life. What is vanity anyway? It's having or showing undue or excessive pride in one's achievement. Do you have vanity in your life? Do you live vain from day to day? Is there a concern on your part that vanity may be creeping into your home, your marriage, your relationship with your children, your job, how you live, how you work? The success that you have is so wrapped up in this attitude of being successful. In the book of Ecclesiastes, I want you to direct your attention there. And we'll read chapter 2 and verse 18. Thus I hated all the fruits of my labor for which I have labored under the sun. For I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or foolish. Yet he will have control over all. All of the fruit of my labor for which I have labored by acting wisely under the sun. This too is vanity. Therefore I completely despaired, and for all the fruit of my labor for which I have labored under the sun. When there is a man who has labored with wisdom and knowledge and skill, then he gives his legacy to one who has not labored with them. This too is vanity and a great evil. For what does a man get in all his labor and his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days, his task, his painful, grievous, even at night, his mind does not rest. And this too is vanity. Verse 18 says that we work to gain wealth, but we must leave it behind. And we must leave it behind because death's door is always ready and waiting and open for any of us to walk through it. We leave it behind for our children, for our spouse, or for someone who has left in a legacy, a will, or an estate, or a trust. All that accumulation by living in the fast lane and how you live to accumulate, and it's gone in the flick of an eye. Many of you young people know young people within your own school that probably aren't there now because they died somewhere in the past year or two. Those of us that are in the up-and-coming group, the age group where we're really successful and things in our lives seem to be going well, and you go to work one morning and lo and behold, old Charlie or Jane's not there because over the weekend they had a stroke, a heart attack, or something claimed their life. And what did all of that success that they were achieving, what did that gain them? Well, they left it behind. And someone now is left to take care of it. Someone else is now going to take care of all of those possessions and all that wealth. And I can hear you say, and I'm saying to myself, well, I better make sure that they handle it right. And how do we do that? Well, in our business, we go right into the grave almost, and we write a trust for you. And that trust will dictate how you want all this wealth to be taken care of. But, you know, even that is not a guarantee because whoever you give that wealth to might just squander it. Your children may squander it away. They may live unrighteous lives, never even follow after God. And all that you accumulated is for naught. We may leave it to someone that does a poor job. But what does that matter? Why do we care so much about the material things of this life? You know, we accumulate wealth live in the fast lane. This relationship to this earthly life is so much a part of us that we never think on terms of what life beyond the grave was really like. And nor do we really care much about it. Except to say, well, I know I'm going to die someday. And when I get a little older or so, I'll worry about that. And then when we do get older, we'll say, well, when I get a little older, I'll worry about that. And when we get a little older, we say, well, I'll worry about that when I get a little older. And I don't ever come to grips with what life is really all about. And I continue to live with the attitude that this life, its things in this life, its possessions, its relationships are greater than the relationship that we have with God. In this reading, it's really amazing. How many of you at night, after you've gone through the day's work or whatever responsibility you've got, you lay your head on the pillow, you think you've been successful during the day, and you've accomplished all that you think you could accomplish. You've gotten an A on your test. You've been an achievement that day. You sold $1 million worth of sales, or you've designed the ultimate in some type of piece of equipment. Or you've taught the best class you've ever taught in your whole life. Whatever your prospect in life is, or as a retired person, you say, boy, this day has been the most wonderful day of my life. Boy, retirement is wonderful. I've got to do exactly what I wanted to do today. But what does he say? Even the person that's successful puts his head on the pillow and is concerned and worries about what has happened. Worries about tomorrow. Am I going to have a good day tomorrow? Am I going to be successful? Am I going to get that good grade on that paper? Am I going to be the person that sells the ultimate in my job? Am I going to be able to keep up with production on my job? And after today, I've done everything that I could be asked of me. And those that are retired, they say, how could tomorrow be better? The wonderful sunshine, the fall weather, the harvest of the grain and the wonderful day that I've enjoyed. But tomorrow, what about tomorrow? What will I do? And the writer says that, what? He says, because all his days his task is in painful, is grievous, and even at night his mind does not rest. How many of you do you have to put your head down at night and you can't even go to sleep because of worry, because of concerns, because of problems? We need to have our mind, our heart, and our thoughts about things that are not materialistic. That's me too. I'm talking about me. This lesson is designed for all of us, folks, because it caught me when I read more about this attitude of vanity. James, the 4th chapter, has some thoughts that I want to share with you. James, the 4th chapter, verse 13. Come now, you say, tomorrow, today or tomorrow, we shall go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. What does that mean? Be successful. Be an achiever. Enjoy the things to the maximum. I've got the fast lane whipped. I've got control of it. Yet, you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then it vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and also we do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your own arrogance. Vanity. Attitude about me. I'm achiever. I'm a winner. I'm number one. But as it is, you boast in your own arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does it not, to him it is sin. If we know what to do and we neglect to do that, then we are committing sin, as this writer says here in James. Going into chapter 5, come now, you rich, and weep and howl for your miseries, which are coming unto you, upon you rather. Your riches have rotten, and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. And it is in the last day that you shall be stored up your treasure. You shall have stored up your treasure for that last day. Future plans that we set aside for things that are going to be successful for us in days to come. What are examples of those people in the New Testament that lived this life in the fast lane? And what did they have to say? And what vanity did they express or did they have in their life? The rich young ruler came to the Lord and said, I've done all these things from my youth up. What lack I yet? And you come to the Lord with your hands out and you say, I've done everything you've asked of me, Lord. What do you want me to do now? I've become a member of the church and I've done all this. I'm successful. You want me to do what? You want me to give more time to the Lord? You want me to do more for His work? You want me to spend more time with my children and teaching them the gospel? Well, Lord, I can't do that. Don't you know I'm successful? I'm rich. I'm an up-and-coming person. I can't do that, Lord. The rich young ruler, he did everything but give up a little money. Give up the money that he had so worked so hard for and attained. Rich man and Lazarus in Luke 16 chapter. The rich man couldn't even buy his way. Couldn't even buy his way because he didn't have any money to buy anything with, don't you see? Just a tip of on his tongue of a little water. It's all he wanted. This rich man did not take heed while he lived. And he couldn't buy his way out of the torment that he was suffering. The rich fool in Luke, the 12th chapter. And I think so much that portrays the American public today that I can never express. The rich young ruler says, or the rich man said, well, I've had a great harvest here, and what am I going to do? This is the best harvest ever. I made more money. Let's say that, just to translate that to your life. I made more money this year than I ever had in my life. Look at my 1040. Good grief, that's more than I've ever made in my whole career. Now what? Well, I'm going to make plans next year to do even more. I'm going to find some tax loophole so that I can make a little bit more money. I'm going to take a second job or work very hard to make sure that I get that job that's going to put me on the road more, that's going to take me away from my family more. I'm going to even maybe take a second job, start my own business, put my wife in there, or my children, put them to work. What happened? This ruler said, I'm going to tear my barn down and build them bigger. Just for the sake of being more successful. Just for the sake of saying that I was the ultimate achiever. Always striving after bigger, better, is foolish. And what happened? The Lord said, your life is required right now. It's required of you right this minute. Too late. It's too late. Whatever you've planned, schemed, worked out, your life can be taken away from you and it will be too late. Vanity of this world will eat us alive. It will sap the strength of you personally, me personally, and this church, and the work of this church. Back to the book of Ecclesiastes, the second chapter, verse 24. There's nothing better for a man to do than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without Him? For to a person who is good in his sight, he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. And while to the sinner, he has given the task of gathering and collecting so that he may give to one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after the wind. Can you catch the wind? Can you can it? Can you put it in a bottle? Can you retain and control these things? That he talks about in verses 24 and 25. Man cannot find happiness and fulfillment But only through God's direction, and by God's direction, can that come about. The writer continues throughout the next two or three chapters, chapter 4 and 5 in particular, talking about the futility of this relationship to the world, this vanity, this living for the vain things of the world. Remember what we said about vanity. It's a vicious circle. It changes our allegiance. It makes you a nuisance, a person that it becomes unpleasant to deal with and live with. You become an ingratitude person, a person that has no thankfulness or caring. It turns you away from the things of the Lord. And you're yoked to the things of the world, the material attitudes of this life. That's what vanity does. And it's a futile relationship, it says in chapters 4 and 5 of this book, if you read them. The writer says that literally, that it is futile for man to try to sustain his relationship because it's like striving after the wind. Early on I talked about our station in life. Chapter 4, verses 13 through 16 talks about that. And in those passages it talks about a young man who was not the greatest achiever, certainly. He was not the richest in the kingdom. He was not a man of position, per se. But what? He was the person that had greater station as far as God is concerned in life than the man that was the king of the country, mature, successful, had money. The young man that had little, that had no station in life, was more successful in God's eye. Was more successful. Any attempt to become successful can become a love for striving after the vain things of this world. I say can because it is not wrong for us to strive to be successful and achieve. It is wrong for us to disregard how we should live as Christians and take up after the vain things of this world. 1 John 2:15 says that love not the world nor the things that are in the world. And if you love the world, the Father is not in you. Do you love the world to that extent? What we're saying there, what John is saying, is that do you love this life, this physical life, this relationship to now, living here in this area? And this, is it better? Is it greater? Is it more successful than anything that you can think of? Or is the love of God more important? Is your relationship to God more important than the fact that I've got a new car or a new this or a new that or I'm successful? There are some conclusions that need to be drawn, and the writer in Ecclesiastes certainly does an excellent job by stating those in the 12th chapter. The conclusion of the vain living, the vanity of life, and this relationship to this life is such that the author says the conclusion is this, that when all has been heard, everything's been done, all that you can do to the very deathbed that you might go and be successful on that very day in a material way. He says, fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. And that's why I said early on that it applies to young, to the middle-aged person, and to those that are retired. It applies to every person, whatever stage in life. Fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act into judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or which is evil. God will bring into judgment every act. To me, that's a fearsome statement, fearful statement. To think that God will bring into judgment my very thought, my actions, my whole life will be before Him. Whatever I've done, whatever I've said, whatever I've tried to do in this life will be before Him, and He will make judgment on how I've lived and how I've conducted myself. Not on how successful I was in this life. Not on how much money I left behind. Not on whether or not I did well as far as the material things of this life are concerned. He's not going to base His judgment, His promises on that total. If you add them all up, the goal that every man and woman should have in life, that's living a Christian life, their goal should be that the balance that's weighed should be tipping the scale totally without any question in favor of God. And the works and the life that we live should be weighted in such a way that all of our life should be devoted to Him. Whatever stage of our life we might be in. Whatever age we might be in. Romans 2:16 says that He will even judge the secret things. It seems that vanity is such open material attitudes that are for all to see. Certainly God is knowledgeable of that, and so are people around us. But how many people are aware of what you think, how you feel? Does your wife know? Does your husband know? Do your children really know how you feel and think and how you feel toward God? Well, God does, because He says in Romans 2:16 that God will even judge the secret things. The things that I think that I'm keeping from other people, God knows. And He will bring in the judgment. Romans 2:35 also asks the question, who shall separate us from the love of God? Who shall? Will it be some person, something, the vanity of life, the relationship that we have in this life and to its material end? Is that what's going to separate us from God? The question in Romans is something that's relevant to us today. Romans 12:1-2 says also that we should not be conformed to this world. And that means not be caught up in a vanity of life, a relationship to this world that we can't even designate between what is for a Christian or a person of this world. We are to be transformed by the faith and by the grace that's been in our privilege that's been given to us by God to become Christians. It is a privilege, it is a blessing to have the grace of God given to us without any action on our part. We don't merit it. We don't deserve it, but God has given it. His arms are open. His mind is clear about the matter as far as your life and my life is concerned. His mind is clear about how we should live, too. There isn't any question in God's eyes about how you should live and how I should live while we're in this world. Our lives should be headed in the direction of heaven and not be centered upon the things of this life and the vanities of this life, because it's just like the author said in Ecclesiastes, it's just like chasing after the wind as far as the things of this world are concerned. Well, acceptance and obedience to the will of the Father are the keys to His acceptance of us. He accepts, He welcomes you, He welcomes me into His kingdom. But we must believe what we hear and see, what we read. We must believe that with all of our heart. And that means that we can't be allowed or allow ourselves to be caught up in a relationship of this world to the extent that we have no time for the Lord and His work. We can't let this vanity engulf us to the extent that we forget the will of the Father and what He has asked us to do. We can't allow ourselves to be controlled by this relationship in this world. Today we're imploring that everyone in this audience take heed to what, not what I said, but what the Old Testament has said and what the New Testament has said about vanity. These are not things that I'm saying that are new to you. They're not things that I'm reading or seeing that are new to me either. They're things that are renewing our attitude about how we should be living life. if you're not living that life, if you're not in accordance with His will, and you're out of step with Him at this time, you're not seeking after the things of heaven, you're not thinking in terms of the life after this life, then now's the time to make a change in the direction of your life and your thinking. There are those that are members in this assembly right now. And there is nothing that I'm going to say, obviously, today that probably will change your mind about what you've already made your mind up about. Except that what I'm standing here and what I'm saying is from the New Testament, from the Old Testament, it's from the Bible, the inspired book. It's not me speaking, it's what the Lord has said about this matter. We're imploring that those that are not members, that you would consider what the Lord has said about this matter of vain living, because you're caught up in it. And you need to respond to the gospel. You need to make your allegiance known. And those of us that are members, that are weak and that might need the strength of the church and might certainly need the prayers of those here, and that the angels in heaven would rejoice that we would respond and saying that I've lived a vain life. I need to change my direction. I need to come back to the Lord. Whatever your desire is this morning, we're asking, we're pleading that someone would respond to God's call while we stand and sing.